They say we always hurt the ones we love. But for some women, causing pain is a passion. A possessive girlfriend doesn't want to lose her punching bag.
That is sadism.
A British mom runs a house of horrors.
His body was a roadmap of torture, abuse, and neglect.
And an unhappy wife plots a permanent separation.
I'm absolutely sure he suffered.
These deadly women love to hate. They are sadistic souls. In Columbus, Ohio, in 1994, the sweet scent of perfume brings together 21-year-old Rick Whitcomb and 24-year-old Vicky Frost.
To my greatest sales day ever.
They were in a sales program. They were both interested in getting into this business of selling perfume. That's how they met.
How did you go today?
Terrible. I couldn't sell a bottle of perfume to save my life. Do I smell or something?
Like chicken.
The young couple has a whirlwind romance.
And the next thing I knew that he was living with Vicky.
It appeared to be just your normal relationship. Nothing unusual about it.
Why do you have to go back there?
I can't just quit my job.
Rick's new to town. He left his home in Cleveland to go to college.
Take care of myself.
Like most moms, Faith Whitcomb was sad to see him move out.
We love each other and support each other, which is why when he went away, he goes, "You're not going to have that empty nest stuff, are you?" And I said, "Well, probably will, but I'll get over it."
Faith has a good reason to be a protective mom. Rick's inherited a challenging eye condition.
He had night blindness. That's the first thing that happens. And then you get tunneled vision, like you're looking through binoculars. And only you don't see as far.
Rick's coped with limited sight since childhood.
I love you too, Mom.
With the help of a loving family. Vicky's upbringing is completely different.
Stop your complaining and get a job.
She's a single mom, still living at home with her mother, Betty.
I've had my time at that. It's your turn. And weren't you a good mother?
Oh, that is.
And it's volatile.
Even though Vicky and her mother, Betty, fought a lot, they still chose to live together.
I'm sick and tired of you in my ear all the time.
I think they were into the fighting.
Vicky's stepbrother and daughter witness it all.
I mean,
just shut up! All right, the both of you. I'm sick of hearing it, and so is she.
She's trying to tell me how to raise my kid. A woman who's been married 5 times.
We've had previous professional contact with her on domestic situations. Trespassing issues.
But when Vicky's temper takes over, they need the police to stop her.
Vicky at one point had a knife and was going after her mother with it. It was just very volatile, a very volatile situation.
Calm down, ma'am.
Stop it! Don't do it!
Which Rick wasn't used to.
I want Rick to
push me. Excellent choice.
Rick only sees good things ahead. He is in love with Vicky and adores her 4-year-old daughter.
He was a kind person, and when you're a kind person, you think everyone else is a kind person.
But Rick's kindness isn't rewarded.
I am way better at this than your mom.
He was pushing her on the swing, and for some reason, Vicky got upset. She kicked him in the groin.
I know what you're up to, Rick, and I won't stand for it. Come on, we're going home.
There's a theory in psychology that adults marry what they grew up with. And if their childhood was chaotic, their adulthood will be. And if it isn't, they'll make sure that it becomes chaotic.
Rick keeps the abuse a secret from his family. But at his sister's wedding, everyone witnesses Vicky's bizarre behavior.
Vicky was dancing provocatively with other male individuals that were attending the wedding. She was kind of upset about Rick's close relationship to his family. She was highly intoxicated. She was upset that Rick wasn't paying enough attention to her.
Really?
Yeah, really.
She was just an individual that needed to be the center of attention all the time.
Vicky doesn't want to share Rick with anyone. Not even his family.
She didn't like us, though.
Sorry.
She was trying to cut him off, which is what an abuser does. They try to cut the person off.
Away from prying eyes, Vicky's abuse becomes more cruel, taking advantage of his poor eyesight.
Can't you see them?
You can. You can only hear them.
Come on, Ricky.
He couldn't see at night, and she would take his keys, throw them out in the yard at night. So he would have to search for them on his hands and knees because he couldn't see.
Come and get them, Ricky.
I think Vicky did that because it made her feel good.
Getting warmer.
That is sadism.
Warmer.
Humiliated and abused, Rick still doesn't reach out for help.
For at least a year, she was abusing Rick in this relationship. Oh!
Come and get them.
It's not uncommon that women abuse men. We just hear less of it because a man is much less likely to pick up the phone and call the police. He's embarrassed.
Rick knows it's time to go, but leaving a controlling woman isn't easy.
I mean, the most dangerous time in an abusive relationship is when the person that's being abused leaves.
Columbus, Ohio, 1996. After being abused by his live-in lover, Vicky Frost, for over a year, Rick Whitcomb confides to his mom that he is leaving her.
Vicky!
We were relieved. We missed him. We just were glad he was coming home.
Rick is concerned how Vicky will react.
Do you have to go this minute?
But thinks he has the perfect plan.
The doctor said if I don't get the treatment now, my vision will get worse.
He says he has to go back to Cleveland for treatment on his eyes.
That's what he told her.
Yeah.
How long are you going to be gone for?
He didn't tell her he was leaving her for good. He told me he was tired of Vicky and tired of Columbus.
Vicky doesn't believe his story about eye treatment. She thinks he has met someone else. Anger and jealousy take over.
I think Vicky felt betrayed. She was in disbelief that the relationship was going to stop.
She knew he was leaving and was in a rage about it.
The night before Rick is going to leave, January 19th, 1996.
It was that slut from the party, wasn't it?
No.
Well, who is it?
No one!
I know you're cheating on me!
Yeah, and I know that you're cheating on me!
With who?
The couple has their last fight.
Don't you think I can see that?
They don't care that Vicky's family and her girlfriend, Renee, hear it all.
What do you mean you should have?
Well, you would have just sat there and done nothing.
And the argument started to escalate and become more heated.
What would you have done? You wouldn't have done anything!
For a year, Rick takes Vicky's abuse without striking back. Tonight, he snaps.
Rick grabbed her by the neck, and Renee indicated that Vicky's face was turning red. And that's when Renee said she interjected.
Rick, let her go! What is wrong with you? Calm down!
The assault stopped right there. Rick was no longer a threat. This is when Vicky became enraged. There was one clean puncture wound to his chest.
Because of his vision, he never saw it coming.
Rick staggers outside. Vicky doesn't come to his aid. But her friend Renee does.
Rick, are you okay? Can you hear us?
She saw Rick laying on the ground, and she saw that his face was purple, and he was making some noises, like he was trying to breathe, and he couldn't.
Please hurry, his face is turning purple.
Renee calls 911. But Vicky
Rick.
Still won't accept what she's done.
She started pounding on his chest and telling him to quit faking and get up.
Stop faking! Wake up! Rick! Stop faking!
It's hard to imagine no one understood what was happening, that Rick was dying.
So he died on a cold January sidewalk with some maniac beating on his chest. We weren't there to say goodbye.
I was chopping the cauliflower.
When police interview Vicky, she gives them a simple explanation.
And the knife hit it.
She said, I told him that you better never touch me or never mess with me.
Vicky is charged with aggravated murder, but doesn't go to trial. She accepts a plea bargain, guilty of the lesser charge, a voluntary manslaughter.
She never showed any remorse. She never came and apologized. She never spoke to us at all.
Vicky spends 9 years behind bars. She is released in June 2005. Rick's death isn't her last contact with the police.
We've responded to her residence for assault, domestic violence, burglary calls, and theft calls.
Vicky seems to have an anger management issue, and if she doesn't get it under control, she can expect to spend more time in prison.
Vicky chose chaos in her life and swept those around her into that personal storm.
I think Vicky is actually the type of killer that is motivated by her emotions that she can't control.
There was never any question as to which one of these two people, Vicky or Rick, would survive the relationship. It was always going to be Vicky.
When a woman is addicted to control and power,
the torture activity escalates.
Stay out of her way.
Bloody thief!
His body was a roadmap of torture, abuse, and neglect.
Hello.
In 2005, 31-year-old Andrew Gardner can't believe his luck when he meets 23-year-old Claire Nichols.
Come closer.
He was very quiet, very shy. He had difficulty making friends. I think this was potentially his first real serious relationship. By all accounts, he was besotted by her.
The couple quickly moves in together and settles in the tiny industrial town of Chilton in the north of England. Andrew becomes an instant father to Claire's three children from previous relationships.
Andrew took to fatherhood very well. He would look after them, he would take turns and help them to wash, take them to school, and play with them.
Andrew is soon to be a father in his own right. Claire is expecting their baby. But it doesn't seem to bring her any joy.
What'd you do that for?
I told you to clean the floor.
I did.
Well, it's not good enough.
It's never good enough.
Claire had a violent temper. She could spark at any time. It took very little to provoke her.
Scrub it!
A simple man with a below average IQ, Andrew is no match for Claire.
Scrub it.
Andrew was vulnerable and would be considered a vulnerable adult.
Get that sport!
Andy was known to be a sweet, nice guy.
Don't make me tell you again, okay?
He never stood up for himself.
Andrew isn't the only man Claire dominates in the home. Her younger brother, Simon.
What about those ones?
Give them a break.
Oi, oi, gotta earn a keep, boy.
Must also obey her rules.
Claire would take anyone into her group, into her home, that would do what she said. It was that simple.
Nobody would do anything in the house unless she was asked and gave permission to do so.
Is it okay if I go and visit my mom this weekend?
No way.
I haven't seen her in ages.
Deaf as well as dumb.
What are you doing that for? Look, Claire, I'm going.
No, you're not.
Proud new dad, Andrew, isn't even allowed to take their baby to meet his family.
I think Andrew would have been very, very isolated. And he had no family, no friends, no social network whatsoever in Chilton.
That was nothing.
I think Claire would have resented Andrew being in touch with anybody apart from herself.
By January 2009, Andrew is hardly leaving the house.
She allowed him to leave her house to go and down to the end of the street to the school gate.
Playing dad is the highlight of Andrew's day.
Look after your brother too, huh?
Make sure he doesn't get into any trouble.
But his devotion will come at a cost that will stun this quiet English town.
A sadist always needs one victim in their life that they can play with.
Oh, yes!
Chilton, Northern England, 2009. To the outside world, Claire Nichols is a caring mother of four children. No one knows what's happening inside her house.
Claire made all the household decisions. What to eat, where to shop, who was flavour of the month.
Quit staring at us, you lazy dog.
Come on, Claire. I'm starving.
Claire's need for control becomes something more.
No.
She starts depriving Andrew of the most basic of needs, food.
Andrew wasn't allowed to eat unless Claire told him that he could eat.
Claire would describe Andrew as useless and worthless and a drain on the household budget.
Andy was chosen to be victimized by Claire because he didn't stand up for himself.
If Andrew dares to protest, Her brother, Simon, deals with him swiftly.
Give him another one.
She was the ringleader, and she got other people to join in her horrible, horrible activities.
Claire had a power over vulnerable, weak people of low intelligence.
35-year-old Andrew is reduced to stealing food in his own home.
You bloody thief!
The abuse would drive most people out of the house, but Andrew won't leave the child he cherishes more than anything in the world.
Dirty sod.
He didn't want to leave because that would have meant leaving his daughter. And I think that his daughter was the one thing that kept him going.
Steal from me again and I won't just cut off your pockets.
As the weeks go on, Claire adds salt to the wounds.
Look who's here, right?
She invites her ex-lover to move in. 44-year-old Stephen Martin has an IQ of just 59. Exactly her type.
Andy, look who it is. He's the trouble I've been talking to you about.
Is he?
Stephen was, again, somebody who was certainly manipulated by Claire.
Claire now has two thugs to do her bidding.
I hear you've been a bad boy.
See, Andy, this is a real man.
We're gonna have some fun with him, eh?
The abuse becomes more sadistic.
Okay, Andy, you ready? Hold still.
Stephen was encouraged by Claire to burn Andrew with his lighter.
Claire Nichols is an industrial strength sadist.
Behave yourself, Andy.
You're bleeding all over the center, you dirty sort.
I think Claire got so much pleasure in torturing Andrew, she devised even more cruel, callous methods on a daily basis.
You're in for it now, Andy.
Claire knew exactly what she was doing. She wasn't hearing voices. She wasn't delusional. She had a personality disorder, which means it's a clinical term for bent and twisted.
Even beaten animals are cared for better than he was.
Weeks of ongoing abuse take their toll on Andrew's body.
He's waking up in time for the show.
He doesn't have the strength to protest when Claire commits the ultimate humiliation.
Torturing Andy?
See this, Andy?
Was sexually arousing for her. She would have sex with her new boyfriend right next to where Andy was lying. This was her form of humiliation.
No one in the quiet village has any idea that Andrew is a tortured prisoner. There are no more walks with the children. He is barely able to move. He clings to life and hope.
Even though this man was a victim, he had a great deal of courage. He had sustenance. He had endurance. I believe Andrew wanted to live.
Andy, get up, man.
Come on. How about we lay him up again, eh?
Oi! Turn him on his back.
All right. Come on, lad.
Friday, March 13th, 2009.
Did you hear that crack?
Claire's sadistic desires
okay.
Finally go too far.
Take it like a man.
When
When she landed on his chest, it caused the ribs to fracture. The fractured ribs would have pierced the lungs, the heart, and the tissue. He would slowly be suffocating to death.
It's an agonizing end for a meek and harmless man.
She had to know that jumping on the chest of a weak and starving person would kill him.
The game is over. Andrew is dead. Now the torturers have to explain a body. They call the paramedics and spin a yarn.
Oh, Andy. Poor Andy.
Simon, Stephen, and Claire have obviously got their heads together. They've obviously tried to concoct some sort of cover story.
They claim Andrew staggered home after being mugged.
He said he was attacked at the pub.
Yeah, he said they mugged him.
He had bruising, he had cuts to his face. The extent of the injuries, both externally and internally, was well over 100 injuries.
Is he dead?
This would have taken extreme force, repetitive injury, and great determination. This was the intent to kill him.
Andrew's crippled body points to murder.
His injuries were certainly not consistent with being attacked outside because they were so bad he couldn't have possibly walked anywhere.
His body was a roadmap of torture, abuse, and neglect.
Claire was probably arrogant enough to think that the ridiculous story they told the ER workers would suffice. Fortunately, she was wrong.
All three are arrested and in January 2010, convicted of murder. Simon Nichols receives a minimum of 25 years. Steve Martin, 20 years. Ringleader Claire Nichols is sentenced to life with a minimum term of 32 years.
Oh, Claire's undoubtedly evil. Undeniably. Don't think anybody could say anything else.
We were never able to establish a motive as to why they inflicted such abuse onto Andrew.
Claire always wanted control of the men in her life to do her bidding and to be her sadistic playthings.
Claire Nichols' thoughts were as deformed and as malevolent as the injuries she placed on Andrew's body.
Claire was probably born with some very unfortunate DNA that grew into being a full-blown sadist.
Want to know more about the women featured in tonight's episode? Visit us online. Reidsville, Rockingham County, North Carolina. A tiny, laid-back community where people feel safe to leave their doors unlocked.
It's normally quiet. There's very little goes on in this area.
Until March 24th, 1999, when 30-year-old Christine Kemmerlin answers a knock at her door.
I'll get it.
She was in the back room, the area where you do the laundry.
Hi, my car's over
there. Somebody claimed their vehicle had broken down and wanted to use the phone.
Christine feels safe. Her husband, 41-year-old Wayne, is home.
Wayne Kemmerlin was working at the computer at the time, so when he seen there's someone in the house, he came to the other side of the table to greet this person.
Christine leaves the men to solve the car trouble, but this stranger wants more than a phone call.
And when he finished the phone call...
Okay, I'll wait by the car.
He turned Mr. Kemmerlin.
Oh, hey, sir. How's it going? How much do I owe you for the call?
It was too late.
No, please, no.
He had been shot several times.
Christine runs for her life to the home of their neighbor, Al Davis.
She said that Wayne had been shot. She was screaming hysterically.
Where is he?
They call 911 and race back to her dying husband.
I followed her back over there, hoping I could help him in some kind of way, but actually he was already clammy. There was nothing I could do. She went back outside for some reason, and then she came back in, and she said, oh, yeah, his truck is gone.
Wayne's truck's gone. He took Wayne's truck.
The killer steals Wayne's pickup truck. Christine gives police a detailed description of the intruder.
He was a black man. He was about 5'10", and he had short hair and big, fat lips, and he was wearing a big blue puffy coat and blue jeans.
She was pretty good in her description.
You know this
but
man?
Something doesn't feel right to Detective Dean Venable. If the motive is auto theft, why would the man come to the house?
I don't know.
Who would do that? In Rockingham County, that was astonishing.
There's a lot about Christine Kemmerlin that's astonishing. She's on her third marriage, but still, family life doesn't seem to have much attraction.
She was just totally dissatisfied with her life. It was obvious she was to everyone.
She's spending her days with a ragtag of lovers and drug users.
They stayed up in the house all day. Come to find out, they would take it and dealing in drugs.
Christine wants to become a dealer herself to make some fast bucks.
Christine had been given one of them money to buy drugs, supposedly to make her money.
Guess what I got you. That's the one you wanted, right?
Christine wants the best for her daughter and herself.
Let's see it on you.
She was always wanting to do something else or be somewhere else or have something else.
Her shopping sprees don't make for a happy home. Wayne can't afford her splurges.
Hi, how's your day?
Well.
After 5 years together, things are tense.
Melanie.
Did not appear to be the ideal marriage. I don't know whose fault it was between Wayne and her.
What is your problem? Are you trying to send us broke again?
I came for it.
With what, huh? With what?
Christine's not just into drugs and spending. She's cheating on her husband with her drug dealer. Soon she decides to spend her money on more than a high.
So, have you found someone?
Maybe.
With the help of her dealer, she banks on a new life.
She wanted out of the marriage and wanted to leave it with money. And she had a plan that she knew would work.
I know you're in there.
But Christine is wrong.
What the hell, Christine? Where is he? He's been locked up. What?
Her lover is arrested for drug possession. She loses her cash. But soon Christine will be single. And more than one life will be ruined. Reidsville, North Carolina, 1999. Christine Kemmerlin is cheating on her third husband. She's hooked up with a drug dealer and wants him to find her a hitman.
Christine didn't have the intellectual capability and the worldly view on how to get out of a bad relationship and take care of herself.
But after handing over her cash, she loses it all when her lover is arrested for drug possession. Her plan to cash in Wayne's life insurance policy is put on hold, and her relationship is getting worse. She claims he is being abusive.
You've had enough.
They didn't share a lot of time together that was to her satisfaction, so.
Don't you ever talk to me like that again.
I'm sorry.
She'd just say he'd come home from work and drink beer while he was at the computer. He would often abuse her, especially when drinking.
To be rid of Wayne, Christine needs a plan B.
Wayne represented every man that had ever abused Christine. And Wayne was going to pay.
But she can't bring herself to do it.
Maybe it's as simple as she just didn't want to get her hands dirty. Maybe it's as complex as she couldn't kill because part of her loved him.
Christine needs a plan C and a new man to pull it off. 24-year-old neighbor Anton Johnson.
He was a friendly young man.
Did he do this to you?
Really, everybody that knew him just said, oh, he's just a nice guy. She explained to him how she'd been assaulted by Wayne. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but that's what she told him, and he believed it.
Using her body and the promise of $3,000 in cold, hard cash, Christine convinces gullible Anton to become her assassin.
He felt protective of Christine, and she convinced him that a bullet was the answer to the problem. Christine was both a victim and a predator.
The pair works through every step of the murder.
This is the back door.
It must look like a violent robbery. Anton will pretend his car breaks down.
It wasn't an overnight thing. It wasn't something she decided last Saturday and done this Saturday.
I'll give you $3,000 after it's done.
She was determined to get out of that marriage, and that was her way out.
To make sure nothing goes wrong, Christine sends off the only possible witness, her 12-year-old daughter.
She had sent her little girl away to live with her mother in Florida. It was unusual.
You'll have fun at Grandma's.
She knew exactly the way she wanted this to happen.
I promise things are going to get better around here.
Yeah.
And she was determined that it happened.
March 24th, 1999. In friendly Reidsville, a neighbor in need is always welcome. But tonight, Anton's only need is for Wayne to die.
She had found someone willing to execute her plan. She told him exactly what to do, and he followed her instruction.
All right, I'll wait by the car.
All right.
Yo, hey, how much owe you for the car?
It's fine. Hey, please, no. Hey!
He tried to defend himself because a couple of the bullet holes were in his arms.
Now she needs to convince police there has been a robbery.
Maybe like an hour or so ago.
But Detective Dean Venable is suspicious of Christine's behavior.
I can let you know.
That'll be helpful, man. Thank you.
She did not have the behavior that I would anticipate someone having if their husband had just been shot. I was kind of concerned about the way that her demeanor was.
From that moment, Christine's best laid plans collapse. After several hours of further questioning, she confesses all.
She just said she should never have done it.
Christine did not hold up well under questioning by police because she's not very smart.
Anton soon follows suit and gives them every detail of Christine's plan.
If he had never met Christine, I don't know if he'd be in jail or not, but it wouldn't be for murder. That would be my opinion.
Both Christine Kemmerlin and Anton Johnson are convicted of first-degree murder.
She never gave me the impression that she was remorseful for the death of Wayne Kemmerlin. I know that she was very much disappointed that she had gotten caught.
In January 2001, Anton Johnson is sentenced to life in prison. In October 2000, Christine Kemmerlin is sentenced to death. On appeal, it is commuted to life without parole.
Actually, I thought the first sentence was the more appropriate one.
Christine always wanted more out of life. Instead of a divorce, she goes for a quick fix and easy money and pays the price.
Christine and Anton didn't exactly create the perfect murder. In fact, it was anything but.
Deadly women enjoyed hurting the men they once loved. Vicki Frost went from being a bully to a butcher. Claire Nichols took torture to the extreme. And Christine Kemmerlin murdered her husband for money. All three stole lives in a cruel way. They were sadistic killers.